Hello, and welcome to How to Make a Memory, the show that explores the items we make for one another and how they impact our relationships. My name is Jen Tierney, and this week I'll be sitting down with my friend Jess to talk about something that we have in common. We both use the act of making as a way of coping with anxiety and depression. Depression can be a huge hurdle for a maker, but we've both found that once we get into the flow of creation, we find tremendous relief. Harnessing the purpose and pride that comes from making something can be a powerful way of shutting down depression, if only for a little while.
It's funny how depression can kind of come in these waves, and all of them feel very different.
Yes, it is a unique illness every time.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had postpartum depression, and then I have just like plain old regular depression. So
Oh, great. Just added on top. And those did feel very different.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Did you have postpartum?
I did. Yeah. And I don't know if it's still considered postpartum because I am kind of, you're always right, postpartum technically. Yeah. But I was diagnosed kind of postpartum. My more mental illness was more anxiety before.
Yeah.
And I did have some like bouts of depression, but it wasn't the same as what that was.
Yeah.
That was like a wallop over the head. Like, this is depression. This is real. This is more than I even expected. We knew to look out for it because I had anxiety and whatever, but it wasn't as expected. Did That's you expect true. It with your...
No. I had it with both of the kids. Before I had the postpartum depression, the depression that I had was so mild and my life was so simple that coping with it was really easy, and therefore I never knew that I actually had it. I was unaware that I had any form of depression before I had kids. I knew that I had anxiety, and I knew that I'd sometimes have a blue day here or there, but it always felt like, every so often I just need a good cry, you know?
Other people have this, right?
Yeah, I was like, that's fine. And then when I got the postpartum depression, that was like a totally different brand of draining, dreading badness. Yeah. And I didn't know that I had it after I had Emma. I think I just thought that I was having something of an existential crisis.
I'm a new parent.
I've created a person. And what are all of the consequences of creating a person? Not just to, like, my life, but to her life and to the life of my husband, to our lives together, all this. And I think that I just thought, oh, this is me getting acclimated to... Yeah. Having a baby. And so that lasted until I got pregnant with my son. And then for whatever reason, pregnancy just like fixes me. Both pregnancies, I was like the happiest person on the face of the earth. I had no anxiety, no depression, just like happy-go-lucky all the time. And so when I got pregnant with Joey, I was like, oh, I'm fixed. It's fine. And...
That'll last nine months.
And then when it came back after I had him, I was like, oh, no, this is...
It's something I actually need this outside fix.
Yeah.
Instead of just continually having babies for the rest of my life.
Right? Which I did consider. I was like, well, I could just get into surrogacy.
There you go.
Just farm out my body.
A lot of money.
Yeah. Right? So I could get paid to treat my mental illness.
Better than paying somebody else. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So it was, I don't think I could do that, but
it's a lot of stress
so
on your
much.
Body.
Yeah. If you want to talk a little bit about what that was like for you after you had your son and what you, how you approached treating it, coping with it, all that stuff, with creating.
Yeah. Yeah, it took me a while to get to there because I think for so long I was so deep in it, right? Like, I almost can't even remember it now. Yeah. I think my brain has wiped it out of existence because it was so bad.
Yeah.
So my husband sometimes has to remind me of things that I said or things that I did because I don't even remember it. Like, and I was going to people, but they weren't kind of the right fit, or like, they went on their own maternity leave, which happened to somebody. Then that practice like semi-closed and then this and then that. So it took me like over a year to see a consistent person. And then at that point, she was just like, you need to be on medication. Like, mm-hmm. this is not, you can't function. I'm working. Like, I went back to work at 3 months. Like,
yeah.
I'm attempting to work through this, but so miserable, barely functioning. Mm-hmm. So, and it was postpartum anxiety too, not just postpartum depression.
Yep.
So I started seeing that person and she put me on a medicine and then ghosted me.
Oh my gosh.
Like Tinder style ghosting. Like, didn't call me back. I emailed, no emails. And then I like looked her up online and someone was like, she ghosted me. And I was like, no, she did it to somebody else.
Oh
like,
my gosh.
But so she had started me on a medication that needed to be managed. So like that was kind of a wackadoo time. So that's when I was kind of like all over the place.
Yeah.
And
oh my goodness, I know. I'm so sorry.
Jeez. And she's like a really good perinatal psychiatrist. And like she was great when I was with her. So at that time I was seeing a therapist too who like A, couldn't believe it because she worked with her.
Yeah.
And B, I said something like, do you think she died? And she was like, no, we have contingency plans if we die. Like, we have patients, we sort them goodness, out. She should never do that to you. And I was like, okay, maybe like, I'm just crazy, apparently. I'm just being gaslit and ghosted. Like,
oh my gosh.
I didn't have to be on Tinder in the dating world because I've been with my husband since high school. Yeah. So now I'm getting the experience in a different way. So that was when kind of I was like, I need something else outside. And exercise, I know... Logically, I know in research, it's good for mental illness. Like, I work, it's like a hour commute in, my kids in daycare, then I commute home, make dinner, da da da. Like, I tried to go to the gym. It was like literally impossible.
Yeah. It's no.
So I was like, what else am I going to do? Like, meditation's not kind of for me because the idea of it is great, but I'm not really like a sit still person. Like, even. Just sitting still makes me anxious. So I feel like every time I try to meditate, I'm just
exactly. I have the same problem. When I try to meditate, I have looping thoughts that I get with my anxiety. And so if I'm sitting and meditating, all I can think is, I can't stop thinking of things. I can't stop thinking of things. Stop thinking of things. You're not meditating right. And then like...
And then you're like in a panic attack and you're like, this was not the goal.
This is not relaxing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So that was not like an option. I was like, well, maybe I'll just try to do stuff I enjoy at least. But a part of depression is that you don't really do stuff you enjoy.
Yep.
But so a friend of mine started painting and I saw his painting and I was like, this is amazing. I want to do this. Like, this seems fun to me. This like calls to me kind of. And so I'm the kind of person who's just like, well, I'm going to do it and I'm going to be great at it. Like, either I'm great at it or I quit. Like, those are the two options. Yep, so
exactly.
Whew, it's not a good habit to teach for sure, for especially to my child. I do not want, I would like him to try things or like practice. Yeah. So this is something that has been like hard for me in a different way because I'm still sticking with it and I'm not very good at it. And that is like not something I usually do. Mm-hmm. But because of what it makes me feel, I stick with it because when I first, I don't remember, I just bought some random stuff off of Amazon.
Yeah.
Like I bought some like $5 small little canvases.
Yeah.
I bought one paint set. I asked that friend for some advice on like paint brushes and like kind of stuck to, I had like an Amazon gift card. So I felt like it wasn't spending money on myself. I'm not really good at spending money on me. Like I'll spend it on my kid and husband, but and I was like, okay, now I have my stuff.
Now I have my paint.
And now I have to use it. And now I have to like waste these precious materials in front of me. Like right? Because it's like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like I'm just going to waste it all? Like, but no, that's not what I'm supposed to be thinking. So the first thing I painted, actually, I was a friend of mine is in a bad relationship with her husband. And she had just told me kind of some extra stories about it that really like broke my heart. And I was already feeling, how do you feel about swearing? I forget if people swear. I was feeling not great on this. It's a family show here. I was feeling not great. And she was feeling not great. And I was just like so angry for her that I was like, I need to like do something with it.
To
put it out there. Yeah. Right. And I'm not like a journaler or whatever. So that was the first thing. I, like, opened my paints and I, like, took out the brushes and I put everything together and I just kind of, like, furiously painted for, like, it must have been, like, an hour or two.
Yeah.
And then it felt like I, like, lost myself in it. Like, yeah. I didn't have to think. I wasn't worried. I wasn't sad. I wasn't upset. I wasn't thinking about, you know, what to give my son for breakfast the next day or whatever. So
yeah.
It was just, like, gone. And it was still, like, I still felt bad about her.
Yes.
that didn't really go away. But it kind of got out.
Yeah, at least channeled the rage.
Exactly. It channeled it into something not productive for her, really. But I've tried that stuff anyway. But
yeah.
It was something at least productive for the rage.
There's an article written 2 or 3 years ago about flow, which is exactly what you experience, which is when you are doing something usually creative, like coloring, painting, knitting, something that requires continuous movement of your hands and things like that. Mm. You get into this place mentally where it feels like you can just let go of all of the concerns and the worries and the extraneous thoughts, and just, it's like your mind just narrows in on this one thing that you're doing.
Yeah.
And it's like meditation.
I was about to say, it's like what you want meditation to be when you can.
Yeah. So when I'm knitting, I frequently say to people, like, yeah, that's how I meditate.
Because it
allows me to, you know, really let go of everything and just focus on that one thing.
Definitely. And I do find it gives a little energy boost at the end, maybe because it takes away the, like, sad and the, you know, the depression kind of saps you of your energy. And so, like, if you sap depression of itself for, like, half an hour, you get a little boost at the end. So that's, like, a nice little bonus, I feel, that, like, maybe wouldn't I don't know, maybe it would. Maybe if I meditated, it would actually work.
Maybe.
And that would happen. But
yeah, I think if you get that anxiety paired with meditation,
then you're just stepping
with,
your energy
stick
more.
With painting.
I know. It's,
I stopped forcing myself to meditate.
I know, right? The Headspace apps and everything. Yeah, there's so many apps, and I still, like, every time, not a new one. But with the painting, I then started to get into drawing because I was like, I kind of should know how to draw something if I'm going to try to paint. And, like, it sounds fun. It's, like, the same thing. It's not the same thing. But related to that, there's this book called Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain. That's what it's about. Like, the flow you were talking about, that you kind of have the left organized side of your brain and the right kind of, but it's not, like, the right creative. It's just less rigid.
Yes.
And then the left kind of takes over even when you're drawing and tries to, like, not draw what you're seeing, but draw, like, what you think you know a face looks like, for example.
Tries to, like, impose its logic on your creativity.
Exactly. Yep. So the idea is you end up getting into this, she doesn't use the word flow, but exactly what you're saying, the flow, and that's the right side kind of, like, taking over, and, like, you push the left side out. You basically give the left, like, some logic puzzles to do, and it, like, goes and, like, trying to figure something out, and then, like, you can draw. So that book was actually really useful, and I think it's a good, people recommend it a lot.
Yeah. The other thing that I was thinking of, just because it would allow you to paint, but for this, like, early time where, you know, you might get blocked from success by the part of your brain that's judgy, like me, like, I'm just this isn't good enough. Why are you bothering? You know? So
yes, that exists.
So I run into that a lot. Then I just remind myself that that's, like, the part of my brain I should be ignoring, because that's not the point of it. You know, the point of it is to feel good and to create something. And, you know, so I wonder if you could buy some of those really, really beautiful, intricate paint by number kits.
I just saw one of those recently. Yeah, I think, like, one of the Facebook ad was showing me it. And yeah, no, I think that would be.
Yeah.
I should ask one of my neighbors I saw on Facebook. She had just done one and it looked like a real painting at the end. Yeah. Like, it's amazing. Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I should do that because that would still keep me in the goal of, like, helping to relax and, like, take away the
but
the stress of life that I wouldn't feel this is terrible, or
you'd be like, this is beautiful, it came out exactly how I wanted it to, because it's got very clear instructions.
Someone designed
and I can
it
follow them.
Because right now I've been in, because I just started, like, drawing too, I can't paint. I shouldn't say can't. I'm learning to paint things that are real life objects, right?
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I've been doing mostly abstract, which actually, like, when I go to look at art museums and stuff, that's what I'm drawn to anyway, so it's it's fine.
Yeah.
And my husband has brought, like, two of my things to work, so he seems to like it, and I'm not too embarrassed to to let him take it and have other people see it.
Yeah.
Even then, I'm still so hard on myself, and I find that everybody who makes anything is hard on themselves, right? And that's, and I think the goal for me is that people who end up making things really well are saying, that isn't what I wanted it to be. Let me try again. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like I said before, I'm like, that isn't what I wanted to be. Welp, I'm just no good at it. I'm going to quit and try another hobby. And that's such a terrible reaction.
But it's unavoidable if, you know, you
are that, if
you have that personality trait of being highly critical of yourself and of having very high expectations of yourself.
Yes.
And I think that if you have that, like so many people do, it's very easy to get discouraged when you're beginning something.
Yeah, so I'm hoping, like, because I'm feeling stubborn, and because it gives me such, I think if it didn't give me such a good feeling when I'm feeling so bad all the time, I don't think I would have, I might have not stuck with it, because I'm always thinking, I could do that. When you look at, like, an abstract painting, you're like, that's just,
it's just a blue bunch of lines,
and, like, or, like, a beautiful Jackson Pollock. You're like, he just sprayed some stuff on the thing. Like, I could totally do that. No, like, that is not what it is. Like, I ended up painting two things, and I had, like, this, I had an actual idea that I wanted to put on paper, and it was not, did not come out. And it was very frustrating to, like, not have the vision of, like, your head into, onto the paper. Or canvas. And so I had actually stopped after that for like a month. And I was so frustrated. I think I was so disappointed. And because I was kind of in a weird place with now, like, in between medication, actually, and on new medication and on, like, all kinds of crazy things, I was depressed and not, I was letting that, you know, the inner, you shouldn't keep going. You shouldn't. Nobody's going to like, nobody's going to look at it. Your husband won't even like it. You, like, he'll just, you'll be embarrassing yourself.
Yeah.
Voice just be louder than anything else, and that comes, I feel like the critic, maybe in quote normal people, I don't, nobody's really normal, but people without depression is a little quieter, or like their other voice is a little louder and they can sometimes shout it down, whereas I feel like the critic is a giant and the other voice is a little mouse, and sometimes it can wily maybe knock over the giant because it, like, twists around its feet. But most of the time, it's, like, getting stomped on. So, actually, I just painted something. Was it last night? I took that painting that I was like, this is not what I wanted it to be. And I kind of, like, threw something on top of it that now I'm like, okay, this is fair. It's not even, like, I still don't even love it. It didn't exactly come out what I want to, but it was a good try.
Oh, I was thinking while you were talking. So first I was thinking about, like, paint nights and how, like, you go and there's one painting and everybody's supposed to paint it while they're drinking.
Right.
Which is, like, it seems like the opposite. Thing,
Or, like, the opposite of what would be a good painting.
Yeah.
But everybody's are great.
I think it's sort of like, well, turn off the critic by having some wine. And you can just, like, do whatever.
But, so I should drink more is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Drink more. No. But then I thought about what you could do without going to paint nights every week that would sort of be like that. And then I was like, oh man, Bob Ross.
I really should watch some Bob Ross. I know.
I think he does oil painting.
He does, but
I mean, it
seems like. He makes those trees and those clouds.
Yeah, you know, just like, it seems to me that listening to his nice, calm, soothing voice and following his instructions to make this beautiful, happy little scene would be quite effective.
Someone was just telling me the other day they had their kids watch it.
Yeah.
And their kids are, like, obsessed with it and, like, just would request it time after time to just, like,
Bob Ross, Fred Rogers.
Oh, we just watched, like, we just watched one of those. It was so good. My husband was, like, tearing up. It was great.
It's just, there was something about that time on PBS that just created programming that was good for your soul. Just a good time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And now we're getting rid of, now we're defunding PBS.
I know. Now PBS is, like, struggling to stay alive.
Yeah.
So, all right. So let's. So Oh my gosh. All right. All right. So is there anything that you're really looking forward to teaching your son how to make?
Yeah. So while we were having this conversation too, I was thinking, I want to teach him how to, like you said, someone is tenacious. Like I want to teach him to whatever he's interested in, right? To go after it and to keep trying and to push through the hard parts where you're not as good or someone's better than you or someone shoots you down or someone tells you you're not good. Right now, he seems really into music. And my husband's, I would say, a musician. He would probably say, I'm not a musician. But he was in bands ever, like his own bands since high school and college. He had an after college band and he played like trombone and band in school and stuff. And he plays guitar and sings. And my son is now really interested in instruments.
Yeah. Sure.
So they're great. He's three and he literally knows every instrument. He has everything memorized from like the book we took out from the library. Like,
fantastic.
The contrabassoon, but like all these things I've never heard of.
That's hilarious.
I mean, I know about the piccolo, but like the euphonium is a type of tuba, he tells me. And I'm like, oh, okay, thank you.
That's lovely.
Yeah, so I would love if he would make music or art. Mm-hmm. I don't want to push him into doing anything, right? But I think both of those are so, they're important in their own right. And people kind of forget that that's a method of growth and problem solving and critical thinking that's not the same as school. Yeah. And I think is important for children to experience as they grow and learn. And if he wants to take music lessons, like we'll do whichever instrument he ends up picking that he can hold, I'm assuming, because probably not a tuba. He's obsessed with a tuba right now. Not hold a tuba, Mr. Three-Year-Old. I mean, that would be my hope for him, right? Yeah. Is to have a passion for making something, whether it's with your hands, like woodworking, art, something like that, knitting, or with your body, I guess. Yeah. Like, that's kind of with your hand. It's with your hands in a different way.
Or with your mind. Like, with your mind, lots of things you can,
Working with him on, he's right now, and he does like drawing, but like, he's three, like nothing really is coming out. And so, you know, I'm not trying to correct him to be, you know, he draws like a circle with like some random lines and he's like, it's a cat. And I'm like, great.
It's a beautiful cat.
It's a beautiful cat. Like, I'm not like, oh, are you sure you shouldn't draw the cat like this? Or like, you know, especially I have to override the perfectionist part of like, well, are those the cat's whiskers or the tail? Like, I don't want to try to put things into his mind, right? Like, I want the imagination to be on its own, to be itself. Mm-hmm. And he has a better imagination than me, I'm sure. So, you know, it kind of dissipates, I feel like, as we get older.
Yes. Yeah, so that's true. I think that's just sort of a learned thing. The same way as like learning how to draw really good circles, you know. I think that I think
so
that
ellipses.
Learning to let your mind sort of go down a path that lets it imagine things is something that you kind of have to learn to do. And I think how you get there is by doing things that require no imagination initially, just to sort of like build up the confidence in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then over time, you'll be drawing your mason jar.
So the physicality is there.
Yeah, the physicality is there. And then you'll be drawing your mason jar, and suddenly you'll think, ooh, you know what would be great on this mason jar? A dragon. Yeah. Like, you just, and then it sort of, that's when your imagination can kind of go wherever. Because you go, oh, well, I know how to make this a little bit more interesting.
Because you design some of, like, your own patterns and stuff, right? You're not, like, following other people's patterns all the time.
I mean, sometimes, But
sure.
Yeah, but I think that, and there are lots of times when I'll find a pattern and I'll say, oh, I love this base. Mm-hmm. And then I'll change a bunch of things inside of it to make it more like what I really want. Now, because I've done so many different things, I can take something from one project and infuse it into another.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that comes, you know, over time.
Over time, I know.
I know. It's so hard. It's so hard. Time is sort of this, like, constant enemy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I've only been doing this for, like, 7 months or something, like, and not even like that as often as I would like to, because life and children and money supplies and blah blah blah. But you know, I can buy cheapy things to paint onto mm-hmm. just for practice. And yeah. I just don't have to show it to anybody. That was a kind of a hard thing. I kind of felt like I needed to show everything to everybody. Because yeah. then, like, what did I do? Like, yeah. what is it for? Who is it for? And I'm not used to making stuff for me.
Yeah.
Right? Like, everything I've ever knit, you know, it's just, I've never knit myself something.
Yeah.
I don't think. I kept showing people, like my friends or whoever, or Nick, the art. And I was like, but this is embarrassing because it's like new and like it's not really good. And I'm not really proud of.
Yeah.
Like this doesn't represent the vision I had in my head.
Yeah. Or where I plan to be.
You're
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
But there's no reason to show it. Like I think Nick said that to me the other night. He was like, you don't have to show me. And I was like, what? What do you mean? Like, I don't understand. Like, yeah. I have to
show something different. If you're not a journaler, then, you know, that's a foreign concept. This idea of, like, creating something that's just for you. But, yeah, it's interesting how putting it onto a piece of paper, drawing or writing or, you know, whatever, is very cathartic
mm-hmm.
and very rewarding, but, like, really only in that moment.
Yes. Yeah. I imagine most people, like a lot of artists probably feel like that, which is why they keep making art, right? Because yeah. they're like, I liked that. Okay, I'm done. Like, now what? Like, what's the next thing? Yeah. No, I've definitely been feeling like that. Like, the thing I created last night, I was like, cool. Like, great. It's done. Okay, move on. Like, now I want to do something else.
Yeah.
But I never thought about that. That's funny that, like, that's why journaling doesn't really make any sense to mm-hmm. me. I feel like I'm very, like, I very much live externally, mm-hmm. right? Like, yeah. which is why I can talk on a podcast about, like, my mental health. Everything's so external for me. All my mm-hmm. feelings are on my sleeve, as, you know, the saying goes or whatever. And everything that comes into my head comes out of my mouth. Like, there's very few thoughts that are, like, kept.
External monologue.
Yeah. yeah. Like, maybe annoying for some people in my life, but, you know. So I think that went to painting, and, like, I didn't even think about it. That's mm-hmm. why I'm, like, want to show people it, because yeah, I'm not used to, like, appreciating stuff about myself for myself. Mm-hmm. Like, it's always for other people.
Yeah. So. But it also means that you're constantly, like, giving yourself to other people.
Yeah.
And that's draining. That's really, really hard to do.
I wonder, yeah. I find it, well, at least when I'm, like, with other people, mm-hmm. it energizes me. I don't know if you saw that Facebook post a while ago of, like, the introvert gets drained by other people and the extrovert. There is a point, like, especially if it's to people that are not, like, the closest people in my life, like, people at work or whatever, that, like, I'm spending so much energy on them, mm-hmm. then I do get totally drained by the end of the day.
Yeah.
And then it's good to, like, suck up the little bits from my family mm-hmm. or friends I see after work or whatever.
Yeah.
Which maybe is why I was so, I couldn't do the painting, too, because mm-hmm. it required external energy for me as opposed to in cathartic thing. It was, I need to, like, push out my feelings and I don't have any left.
Yeah.
Because I expended them all day already.
Yeah.
You know? A lot of the mm-hmm. paintings, it sounds so obnoxious to say. A lot of my paintings are about being depressed. The one I kind of painted yesterday that I painted over this, like, pink and purples, like, braided, and I kind of, like, put a silhouette almost, like, over it. Mm-hmm. And then, like, kind of, like, thoughts exploding out. I was like, this is so on the nose, but this is what I'm doing today. And I said to my husband, he was like, it's not on the nose, because I didn't know. I wasn't in your head. I didn't know that that's what that was. Mm-hmm. Like, but they're all always, like, spewing my, like, a journal version of, art version of, of journaling. Like, just spewing feelings into, like, paint strokes.
Yeah.
So I wonder if on a refreshed brain.
Yeah.
Even though it's still a depressed brain, right? Because I'm still getting through depression. Like, what difference that would make. That would be interesting to at least, like, experiment.
It's interesting to try. It's, so, I think I only have one painting that I've saved from when I was, like, in high school. And mm-hmm. I took an art class and I really loved it. And I save it because it's, like, one of the only things I've saved. And I'm like, well, I'm going to keep this. Mm-hmm. It's huge. Maybe I'll go get it.
Yes! Like, oh my god, I want to see it now.
So the reason why I bring it up is because when I was in high school, it was before I had any inkling that I might have any form of depression.
Mm-hmm.
And after I had the postpartum and, you know, got into a more, you know, standard sort of depression. A standard depression. I went back and I looked at it, and I had this, like, sudden realization that I've had this my whole life.
Yeah. And you just didn't know any different.
Yeah. And it just, like, when you see it, you'll go, oh, yeah.
Like, what were you thinking? That's really funny.
So speaking of silhouettes, it's got silhouettes on it. So I'm the center.
Oh my god. Oh my god, you're so sad.
I know. Right?
That's really cool.
Look at, so this is like a pocket watch.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Sitting
yeah.
in the middle of the pocket watch, which is actually like a big
teardrops basically.
With teardrops falling into it. It's just like the saddest.
And you're looking down. Yep. And you it's have so a sad. Like a umbrella.
I'm in like a fetal position. Yeah. It's an umbrella.
And then everybody like, has teardrops on their face yeah. and you can't see their eyes and I like know. Nobody has faces and they're right? all in black.
It's just crazy. So yeah, that was where yeah, I was at you're in like... high school. And I looked at it and I went, oh my god. So yeah. Alright, so the last question that I ask everyone is, why do you think making is important?
I mean, lots of reasons. Some of them I mentioned with regard to my son, that I think it's a way to think differently about the world mm-hmm. and to provide for other people. And I feel like that totally just speaks. I feel like I'm in a therapy session. I feel like that just speaks to what I had just said before about the externalizing that, like, all my making is for other people.
Yeah.
And then make other people happy with things you can provide yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That you spent time and energy on versus, like, buying them something.
Yeah.
And that's still funny because it still speaks to giving other people stuff, which
yeah.
I guess is, like, my main focus on making is always to make it for other people, which is interesting and I hadn't thought about before.
I think for a lot of people that's the case, though. I think yeah. that it's very much, like, when we create something, our first impulse is to share it with other mm-hmm. people. And I think that's totally normal.
Yeah. For me, I think making is important because you, A, get, like, growth of yourself, mm-hmm. growth of your individuality, like, mm-hmm. as a, like, finding out more of yourself as a person.
Yeah.
Especially, I keep thinking of it as a parent.
Yeah.
Because I feel yeah. like everything that's, you think about yeah. when you have young kids, especially, is in relation to them. That you can fall into the trap, especially when you're a little older, of like, my friends do this, so I do this. And, mm-hmm. you know, kind of the peer pressure thing. And I feel like making an art and music and knitting and crafting and all of that is, you can't help but be individual when you do it. Even when you're following like a pattern, you tighten, mm-hmm. I'm a tight knitter. Like, I tighten everything yeah. super tight. So, like, mine looks different than you following yeah. the same pattern.
Yeah.
There just has to be individuality in it. And I yeah. think that and noticing that is really important to, like, you as, to the growth of an individual as a person.
Yeah.
To, like, see your own differences and not just your similarities.
Having a conversation with Jess about the personal benefits of making provided me with some important insights into my own motivations. It further solidified for me the integral role that creation plays in my life and how it sustains me during moments when depression comes to visit. Crafting, baking, and imagining all help me to give my mind a break from its worries. Knowing that Jess and others like us reach for their paintbrushes, knitting needles, and whisks makes me feel a camaraderie when depression would prefer that I feel isolated. And now I'd like to tell you about something I made this week. Many weekends, I wake up with a desire to make a specific breakfast pastry, but somehow, in my 32 years on this planet, I've yet to make cinnamon rolls. Until this past weekend, I found a recipe that had lots of rave reviews and set to work. I mixed, kneaded, weighted, sprinkled, rolled, and baked for about 2 hours. And in the end, the result was everything I'd dreamed it would be. And I made enough to store a few extra uncooked rolls in the freezer so I can have fresh baked cinnamon rolls at a moment's notice. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you to Jess for joining me and for having such an open conversation about a difficult personal topic. You can find How to Make a Memory on Facebook at How to Make a Memory, on Twitter at How to Make a Memory with the number 2, and on Instagram at How to Make a Memory. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider heading over to iTunes to rate, review, and subscribe. How to Make a Memory is a member of the Geekend Legion podcast network. Our logo is by Becky Carpenter. Our music is by Chuck Salamon. We get system admin support from Greg Thole. Now, go make something for someone you love.